Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and relationship coach at the Couple Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live monthly on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight it's Thursdays in deference to my very special guest. I wanted her to be able to make it, and this was what worked best. Tonight's 45-minute episode, Healing Trauma Through Yoga, Hope for Survivors, is one I've been very much looking forward to airing. My guest will be Lisa Bolden, a trauma-sensitive yoga practitioner and the owner of Samatal Ayurveda and Yoga in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. So she's kind of a neighbor of mine. Lisa is a graduate of the Kripalu School of Ayurveda. She has been practicing yoga since 2004, and is currently a certification candidate in trauma-sensitive yoga as taught by the Trauma Center at JRI in Brooklyn, Mass. Her passion is to share the complementary practices of trauma-sensitive yoga and Ayurveda with her clients, creating a path to healing that includes a clinical form of yoga with the lifestyle and diet teachings of Ayurveda. She can be reached for an appointment at 603-860-1044 or by email at samatalayurveda.com. And I'll repeat that and spell that at the end. Before I bring Lisa on, one brief housekeeping note. Anyone wanting to call in with a question or comment can do so by dialing 1 on your phone, and you'll be in line to join us on the air. And I'm thinking, Lisa, that for the purposes of continuity, maybe we should pause at a few intervals to take callers. So anyway, hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Susan. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome. I've really been looking forward to this, and I know I enjoyed meeting you recently and talking about trauma-sensitive yoga and myself finding out more about it, not knowing much about it to begin with, and I think it's something that will be really useful for listeners and for potential clients. So I guess my first question to you, Lisa, is I'm wondering if you could define trauma-sensitive yoga. What is it, and how is it different from other forms of yoga?
Well, to place it simply, trauma-sensitive yoga is hatha-based. So for people who practice yoga, you might be familiar with that term. This practice is very much about asking people to be aware of their own bodies, so to adjust as necessary, to use yoga as a form of coming more in touch with who they are on the mat at that present moment. And the difference, perhaps, with the trauma-sensitive yoga is we do use the precepts of hatha yoga, but in with that, we're also really depending upon trauma theory, understanding what trauma is, how it looks in people, how it looks different in different people. And there are various domains that I can go through, different ways that we teach this yoga. It is clinical. And so from that perspective, when we teach trauma-sensitive yoga, one of the things that's really important is that the people that attend these classes are doing so in a very supported manner. So I would not typically be working with people who did not, say, currently have a therapist that they were working with or perhaps going to a group that was supporting them, working through crisis intervention centers. They need to have sort of a web, a network of people around them so that this trauma-sensitive yoga becomes one adjunct therapy that's used along with many other different therapies that I'm sure you can speak to as well. And so when we're doing this work, we're making sure that it is applicable and it's appropriate for the people that are coming here. And so I can speak a little bit more about it, but basically it is yoga. We have certain ways that we do this that perhaps may vary a little bit. One of them is that in a lot of yoga classes, you may find that teachers assist their students. They have a hands-on type of practice. With trauma-sensitive yoga, it is not about us fixing, touching, being in contact with our students. We are more inviting them to come to the mat and to have their practice. There really is no right or wrong. There is a way of noticing your body.
Which is, sounds very interesting and very therapeutic, because I know from my own experience with yoga, my limited experience with yoga, the experience of being directed and being touched can be a little intimidating. You can, even if you haven't been through any major trauma, complex trauma, it can create a feeling of I'm doing this wrong, or I need to do this way, not that way, and my body just won't comply. And it sounds like, what I know about it is that it's invitational. It's not directive in some of the traditional senses.
Yeah, this particular practice, I mean, probably the most important precepts or themes of this are choice. So allowing people to decide how deeply they move, how fast they move, whether they practice with their eyes opened or closed, what forms they want to do at all or they feel are appropriate for them, because they certainly are always invited to also sit in stillness if that feels like what is best for them at that given moment. So choice is really, really important. Staying present in the moment is also a very important theme, so that in this class, we won't do things like use guided visualization. We won't use a lot of metaphors. We're really trying to keep people here and now and allow them to perhaps come into these sensations and not run away from them and dissociate or not become available to what's happening on the mat. So the choice, the present moment, and the other very important theme about trauma-sensitive yoga is that we invite people to take actions, what we call taking effective actions, whereby if they're in a form that doesn't feel right for them to be in, that they always know that they can back off, they can sit back in stillness, or perhaps they're feeling too much sensation, we'll be giving them cues to say perhaps if this twist is a little bit intense or your breathing is labored, that you always know that you're in control of your own body, how much you move, if you move, when you move. And so those are the three main themes that I would say are very, very important. There's lots of ways that we can talk about how that manifests in the program, but I think that's probably the kernel right there.
And it sounds very empowering and very centering for anybody, but especially for somebody who's been through trauma and has been victimized in some way and has not felt that they've had any sense of agency. And somebody who, if they've been through trauma, does not feel centered and is not present in their body. So it sounds like it's very potentially very corrective for these clients. And I guess I'm wondering, that would get to my next question, which would be, who would you see as an appropriate candidate for this work?
Well, I'd like to say that it's available to everybody, and it is, in essence, available to everyone. However, all of the classes that I teach and that we are working with currently, any of the students in the trauma-sensitive yoga program, we need to have the people coming to our classes be pre-screened. So that could be through a therapist. That could be, in my case, I work, two of the classes that I work with are victims of sexual assault or domestic violence, that they have checked in to make sure that whatever the event was, whatever, if there was one traumatic event or if it has been a lifetime of trauma, that they're at a place in their own healing where they can actually tolerate perhaps being in a class with multiple people, although the classes are very small. That can be intimidating to people, that they feel that they can remain present and not be dissociating in such a rapid manner that they cannot stay and sit in a form or stand in a form, whatever it is that we're doing. So from this perspective, we'd like to be able to offer to everybody, but they have to be ready to accept it. And I think that's important with any form of yoga. You don't want to force this on somebody, but if they're at a point in their healing where this would be an adjunct and a really supportive therapy, in Ayurveda we tend to speak about something called softening the matrix, about helping the body to heal a little bit better. And so in Ayurveda, we may do that with food or with routine or with all manner of different ways that we might employ herbs or movement. But in this particular sense, with trauma-sensitive yoga, what we're hoping to do is to help people to come more in tune with sensations, with their bodies, with the place where the trauma resides, so that then these students or patients go back to their clinicians or the group therapy that they're in, and they can actually really begin to delve even deeper into this work because they're allowing this trauma to be handled in a safe, sensitive manner.
That's wonderful. I like the idea of pre-screening so that it assesses suitability and readiness for this work and that people have a kind of team approach to their issues. You can work together in this way, and people, it creates a kind of holding environment that's safe for these clients.
Pardon? Go ahead. No, I was just going to say one thing that's interesting, I think, and important for people to know, too, is that as a trauma yoga practitioner, I almost never know the stories of the people that are there in front of me. I know that they've been recommended. I know that I feel that who's ever done the screening, I trust. And I don't really need to know their story. Somebody else is handling that part. My job is to help them to come in touch with a physical body and with sensations. And so I think sometimes that's important because people might be afraid that they're going to have to tell their story over and over. And that's not where we're going with this particular practice. This is not about being in the intellectual part. It's being in the physical part of the body.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So that they're, you know, they avoid the repetition and they avoid unnecessary exposure. Or, if they're not at a point of feeling like they can retell the story, they've been very selective about whom they've shared that with, there's no experience of force around that or coercion around that or a mandate for that. So it sounds like it's very, very respectful, a very respectful form of work.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Now, what kind of training is required of a trauma-sensitive yoga teacher in order to be qualified to do this work in a clinical setting?
Well, I can speak to the training that I'm receiving from the Trauma Center in Brookline, Mass., which is a part of the Justice Resource Institute, and some people may be familiar with Bessel van der Kolk, who is fairly renowned in the field of trauma. And so there's a really amazing group of clinicians and educators and scientists that work down there, Trauma Center being a portion of that. So this organization actually brings trainings probably to other places, but in my case, I heard about it through Kripalu, and they do a 40-hour training, and there they would take people who are certified yoga teachers and possibly clinicians. Sometimes people have that dual type of training, and there in 40 hours, you begin to understand a little bit deeper about the types of trauma that can occur, about how this presents in people, and then, you know, surely how we use this yoga, how we present ourselves to our students, how we create safe space, how we teach and speak, and all of these things. In 40 hours, although it sounds like a lot, you really just begin to touch the tip of the iceberg. So I had done a 40-hour training in October of 2013, and I realized how much this resonated with me. And they now have, I'm in the second group of a certification program, which began for me this past September and will finish up for me mid-March. And there are 20 of us in this year's class. There were 10 in last year's class. And it's a fairly amazing training. It's mentored, so I have an individual mentor. I have a partner in the group. We all gather by internet each week for an hour-long discussion. And we did a lot of studying. The first couple of months were studying things like how trauma affects children, how traumatic memory is formed, epigenetics, study after study, PTSD, how does it affect veterans. So we spent a couple of months doing this work, and writing papers about it, so researching it, understanding it as best as we could, at the same time learning how to practice this. And it's the more that you practice, and that's what I'm finding, the more that I teach in this manner, whether it's to my partner, to my mentor, to the students that I'm working with, the more that it becomes a way of being, in essence. You breathe and you speak in this manner. It's a little bit different than teaching a traditional yoga class, and we can discuss that part later. And so I think it's with this time and this steeping that really all of the beauty comes out. And these students, the 20 of us that are in the class, we're all over the world. So there were students from Copenhagen, and there's some that are in Japan and some in Canada.
Wow.
We're all over the world, and it's very, very intriguing to hear of the work that all of my co-students are doing. It amazes me, it thrills me, it impassions me, because we're all working in different manners, and the group will be spreading and enlarging. So I can speak to this particular version. It's a 110-hour mentored program on top of the 40 hours, but honestly, I think 110 hours, I'll probably spend 200. You begin to eat, live, and breathe trauma. And it's
like so many things. The more you study, the more you realize there is to learn, and trauma is such a big field, and there's so much research and so much more that we're learning about it, that it's an ever-expanding arena. It sounds so exciting, and I know that when I found out that you were available as a practitioner in the area, I was so excited to find out, because it's a very special form of yoga designed for people who have been through various kinds of trauma, and it seems very, very tailored to these, you know, this population. And it sounds like very sensitive training, very in depth, and very, very exciting. So it's great to see you so excited about it. Mm-hmm. And you know, I know that I look forward to being able to refer people to you to do this work. Now, I'm wondering, for the purposes of our listeners and for me, because I'm ignorant about this one, can you say something about what is Ayurveda? I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Mm-hmm. If it's Ayurveda or Ayurveda. And how does that work with this new form of yoga?
Right. Well, Ayurveda very specifically means the science of life. And Ayurveda mm-hmm. is a science that's been around for over 5,000 years. It's a sister science to yoga and to some of the other Vedic traditions. And so Ayurveda, in a nutshell, to me, I think about it as a way of noticing in order to create better health or balance in our lives. And so in Ayurveda, we talk about opposites, treating with opposites. So if you're very cold all of the time, how can we best bring some heat to your body? If you're feeling if you're feeling very low energy, how might we increase that? If your digestive system is not processing food well, so that you're maybe somebody who experiences IBS or constipation or something of that nature, what might we do with food? In my case, specifically diet and lifestyle are the areas that I really spend most of my time in. And often when I'm working with clients, I will basically say to them, you know, you don't even have to change what you're doing in your life, but how about if you go back and you notice what things are really serving you well and what things are not? So in that way, it's very similar to the yoga, because we say many times in the class, perhaps you might want to notice what you feel. So it's, again, a way of tuning in. And Ayurveda is broad. There's so much that I could say about it. But what's so beautiful about how it works with trauma is that Ayurveda has a perspective. Well, first of all, we always look for a root cause. So people may come to me and say, I'm experiencing, headaches, constant headaches, or skin rashes, or whatever manner of symptom is showing up. But we really look to see, okay, that's the symptom. What was the deeper meaning? What was the root cause of all of that? And that becomes really, really important. And with trauma, when people have experienced trauma, they're going to have a whole host of symptoms, from dissociation to issues with relationships to perhaps anger or whatever, however it manifests. What we're really doing is we know that underneath all of that, there's something else that was there. So the work that I do in Ayurveda, we would tend to look at trauma, anything that's traumatizing, as something that's called a vata disturbance. So it's a disturbance of a constitution. And how we would deal with that is that we would be the same way that traditional medicine tends to treat, say, children with ADHD. We bring in rhythms, we bring in warm, soothing food, we try to take people and help them to ground, offer them ways to do that so that they come back down to the earth that we're on. And so we can do this with the types of yoga that they practice, or sometimes people do meditation. What types of meditation might work? What types of foods? And in the case of trying to pacify this, warm and cooked and moist foods, kind of like that comfort food sort of mentality. You know, you can get much finer tuned, and this is very, very broad, but the precepts of how we would work with people who have experienced something that jars them in a very large way, what do we want to do? But we want to find the ways that we comfort and we soothe and we create safety and we allow them to come back to who they are.
Okay, so it's not only about diet, it sounds like. It's dealing
Correct.
With symptoms, looking at symptoms as information yet to be tapped, and looking holistically at the person. But it sounds like Ayurveda is not only about dietary changes.
That is absolutely correct. And in fact, you know, we don't really look at diseases in Ayurveda. We just look at where are your imbalances. So we don't treat a disease. We continue to go down below and notice that every person has their own, they're an individual. So we don't say everyone who has this particular symptom, it's for the same reasons, because we know in Ayurveda that you're different than me, different than anybody else that is living in our area. So we really need to hear the story. We really need to be able to work with them and tailor this to honor the person. Very, very important. And so you're right. Diet is very important. Lifestyle is very important. It can be meditation. It could be, you know, it could even be people use herbs as well. And I don't tend to specify herbs very often because I feel like there's so much that I can do in the two realms of what and how we eat and what and how we live.
Okay. What I like about it is that it's a systemic way of dealing with people rather than just the usual Western view of symptom relief. You know, just mask the symptom, take a pill for this so you don't feel the symptom. It sounds like it's really looking, and it dovetails a lot with my work where I look at symptoms as information yet to be tapped. What does the symptom tell me about the system and what may need to change at a deeper level in the system? And it sounds like it's very consistent with that.
It really is, and we speak awful lot about a term called pragyaprad in Ayurveda, and that means that we all know exactly what we need, and we all have an innate intelligence. And so the goal for us is to be able to allow people to listen to that intelligence, that own inner wisdom, because they call it crimes of wisdom when I shouldn't be eating cold ice cream on a cold night at 10 o'clock at night and going to bed. My body understands that. However, when I do it, I've committed a crime against what I know to be true, and that's okay sometimes, but what will happen is it will manifest in a certain way in the morning. Same thing with anything that we do, the types of exercise. You know, perhaps I'm running very hot and I still decide to do a form of activity that's going to increase my body temperature. Well, my body already knew that that's not what it was yearning for or needed for healing, and I might have committed a crime. So with Ayurveda, we hope to help people to get back to this inner wisdom. And you're right. I think the work that you're doing as well must be the same, is that just allowing people to, we know everything that we need to know. We're born with it. We just forget that along the way, and things happen to help us forget that along the way.
Right, honoring what we know. Now, Lisa, I'm wondering if you could give our listeners some ideas about how these approaches help these populations. What, in other words, is the message of hope? That's the name of our show, Hope for Survivors. What might be some of the possible outcomes specifically for this type of work for somebody coming in to do trauma-sensitive yoga?
Right. Well, I mean, you spoke about one of them, and one of them is about empowerment, knowing that when you're traumatized, almost in any manner, your body has, in a sense, betrayed you. So if you experienced somebody who physically hurt you, you weren't able to run away. If you're in a troubled marriage, you couldn't get out for one reason or another. So the body that, in many ways, you would think would be able to lead you to safety failed you in that manner. So through this yoga practice, one of the things that we hope that people will begin to understand is that if something is discomforting to them, they can make an adjustment. If they are finding that noticing their breath is too intense for them, they can pause and not do that. So they take back an element of control. Another thing, and it was interesting because I was speaking with a student the other day and asking about certain postures, certain forms, you know, would this be okay? And I was thinking of it from a physical perspective because this particular person had some trouble being on her with some of her joints. And she was so vulnerable, and there were only the two of us at the time. The other students had come in. She said, I can physically do that form. I cannot emotionally do that form. And she said, and if you noticed when you did whatever, it was child's form the last time in a class, she said, I chose to sit. Because we tell students, and we hope that they hear, if this is not appropriate for you, you can choose to do something else. So I think that one of the biggest gains that we would hope is that people come back to having a sense of they can take care of themselves. I also think that although we don't, you know, in some typical yoga classes, you create this, you know, unique community and people rely on each other. And it's a little bit different in that we don't expect that in our trauma-sensitive yoga classes. Some people come very quietly and they leave before you even know by at the end of class. But I will oftentimes find that there are little conversations going on, perhaps little sharings or more just a welcome, saying, you know, it's good that you're here. I'm glad to see you again. Because oftentimes with trauma, there's a breakdown in relationships. It might have been when they were children and they had no relationship with a parent that was safe. And so all of a sudden here, we're asking them to come into their bodies in potentially a room with another four or five people. And that's a skill right in and of itself. Even walking into a class like this, I have people who I know would like to be there and can't. And I do one-on-one work with people because sometimes it's a way of stepping in. And so there, but I do believe because we have now got scientific studies that have actually been done at the Trauma Center and through JRI, and there was a study published just last year, and we're also excited about it because it showed that with a 10-week practice of trauma-sensitive yoga one time a week for 1 hour, women, this was an entire group of women who had treatment-resistant PTSD, so they've been doing either talk therapy or other therapies with really no huge effect. 10 weeks, they found amazing results of whether it was empowerment or sometimes in the case of with relationships, one of the women had commented that she could actually sit on the couch and watch TV next to her husband. And that was huge because she didn't have that need to get up and move and create her own space. Sometimes they may look subtle, but they're profound changes that can happen in how a person begins to view themselves and how they begin to see the light potentially at the end of this dark tunnel.
It sounds like it's really there are some amazing results that happen from this, and that the whole experience of the transformative experience of people experiencing choice. People who've been through trauma is huge, and not only choice and safety, community. It sounds like you're saying, and you know, if normalizing, you know, I would imagine if there's a sense of community, some kind of sharing on any level, it must be kind of normalizing for people that I'm not alone in this, and that other people experience some of these things. But also privacy, doing it, you know, in your own way, in your own time, no pressure. So it sounds tremendous, and I just think it's. How long has this been around? I mean, is this a very new form, or am I just new to hearing about it?
Well, you know, I can't speak to other people. I know that there are other versions of it, but I think Bessel and one of his colleagues began exploring this back in 1998. As far as how long they've been teaching this small 40-hour module at Kripalu, I really couldn't exactly say, but I do know, again, that they've only been doing this certification program since September of 2013. So there is a sense of newness in their wanting to bring people deeper understanding. you know, taking the 40 hours, I knew I got jazzed up about it and that this was something I really felt I could work in, a world that I could work in that I understood in many, many ways. But truly, I came out of that and stumbled and fumbled, which is very normal because it's hard to absorb it. As you said, trauma is a huge subject, and I think you need to sit in it and really continue to learn and be with people who talk about it and help you, because you also, you know, certainly we're compassionate yoga teachers, and I would say most people that go into yoga have a whole sense of compassion, but understanding how to read the students in front of you takes time. So knowing with trauma, as I'm sure you do, that people on the outside may look as though they have everything put together, but there are subtleties in the way that they might react with you or things that you see that you only get good at noticing when you really are there and present for a fair, you know, for a period of time.
And learning to read those signs, learning to, because I think so often people's behavior gets so misread, so misinterpreted, and, you know, learning those subtleties, learning to tune in new ways, I think is so important. Lisa, it sounds to me like you found your calling.
I feel like that I'm definitely in the right place now. I truly am.
Oh, yeah, that's so wonderful. That's terrific. Now, I'd like to take just a brief commercial break to talk about a service that I'm providing, and then we'll get back to our regular programming. I just want to announce to our callers that I have a new passion of my own, and it's called discernment counseling. It's a form of treatment that's been around for a while, but it's been researched very heavily, and I'm sort of on the cutting edge in of a team that has pioneered the more advanced use of it. It's a form of treatment, brief intervention for couples on the brink of divorce. Talk about trauma. And where we call them mixed agenda couples, where one person is leaning toward getting a divorce, feeling more hopeless about the marriage, and the other partner feels more energy or more hopefulness about staying in the marriage. And traditionally, regular couples therapy has failed this population because of the mixed agenda. A couples therapist, their posture would presume two people in the room having the energy and the will to work on things and needing skills and tools to make the relationship better. And that frame really fails mixed agenda couples, where one person is one foot out the door. So I am now doing discernment counseling, which is 1-5 sessions. It's a very different way of working, and it moves couples toward a decision. That's all it does. It's not about skills and tools, but it moves couples toward a clear, confident decision about a direction for the marriage, whether to stay in the status quo, or get divorced, or move toward the work of rebuilding and repair. And at the it could be 1 or up to 5 sessions, and at the end of that, couples, if they decide to stay in the status quo, they go off to do their own thing, continue doing what they've been doing and spinning. If they decide to move toward a divorce, I would refer these couples toward collaborative divorce professionals in the area. We have a wonderful group. If they decide to move toward reconciliation and repair, we change modes. We move into a traditional couples therapy format for a period of up to 6 months with divorce off the table. And we then see what emerges. So what I can say is that I'm very excited about it. It's very, very effective, and I think it really fits the bill for mixed agenda couples. So if anyone is interested in doing this work, I am the only clinician. I'm kind of like you, Lisa. I'm the only clinician in New Hampshire who's vetted to do this work, who has done the training. I am now myself engaged in the advanced training, working toward certification. And so if anybody's interested in it, just feel free to call me at my office at 431-7131, area code 1-800-273-6603, or go to my website, susanlager.com. I have a page with more information about discernment counseling and links to the Minnesota Couples on the Brink project, which pioneered this form of treatment. So now back to our regular programming, and we were talking about possible outcomes for any clients coming in doing trauma-sensitive yoga. And one of the questions that I have for you, Lisa, is what can trauma-sensitive yoga, how can this impact people in their intimate relationships?
Wow. Well, ultimately, what we would hope would happen would that people, especially people who've experienced sexual trauma in their lives, domestic violence, you know, that can be very, very difficult to find true intimacy, but also children who have been abandoned or neglected when they were very, very young might not have a way of really connecting with their partners. And so one of the hopes would be that once, you know, if you've experienced a trauma and your body gives you physical symptoms so that you get nervous about something, rapid heartbeat, you want to run in the other direction, if through trauma-sensitive yoga we can help people to understand that staying present with a sensation, this is a present moment thing that's happening. We're not flashing back to a trauma that happened in the past. This is just a sense, I don't want to say just, that minimizes it, but this is the sensation that you're having. You have an ability, if you choose to do something about it, you also have an ability to sit with it. And once that pattern becomes a little bit more enmeshed in a person, it would hopefully translate into relationships, that when something comes up and an emotion is experienced or body sensation is experienced, that people might begin to understand that, oh, this is my partner, this is my husband, this is my wife, this is right now, these are not the people that hurt me in my life. I might be having this reaction, but being able to come to what truly is, as opposed to going back to something that happened maybe linearly a long time ago, but feels like it's happening right now to you. So it's a very trying to get people back into that present moment, being able to understand that it's an emotion, it's a feeling, it's sensation that they can begin to deal with, and over time, allowing that to translate into a relationship with another partner.
Okay, so it sounds like it mitigates or interrupts the tendency to move into fight, flight, or freeze.
Exactly. Giving them other tools to be able to stay and be present without staying and feeling unsafe, because we don't want people to feel hostage to it either. So it really can take time. You have to be patient with the process, but it has proven itself over and over again.
Well, and it sounds like, you know, one of the things you're really saying is that it facilitates more self-empathy for these clients. That by tuning in, by being present, by being patient, and working with themselves in this way, they're essentially practicing self-empathy, sometimes in a very new way.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And oftentimes when people have lived through traumas where they have been victimized by another person or in a relationship, they come out of this really having a disturbed sense of self, that they're not worthy, they're not good enough, that they, whatever. There's a whole host. I don't even have to put those words into people's heads right now. But they don't look at themselves with a healthy perspective. They don't see themselves as they are. Because inherently in every person, I truly believe there's goodness and wholeness and potential and hope. But that's not what they're seeing. No matter how much you tell them in words, it's not what they feel. And so the desire would be to begin to have them, as you said, begin to, you know, self-love, self-care, compassion, all of those things can begin to rise to the surface.
That's wonderful. Now, I'm wondering if there are any contraindications for the use of trauma-sensitive yoga, people who would be inappropriate for this, when you say that they're pre-screened. Who would be screened out?
I think that. Well, people, let's just say that there was a trauma that just occurred 2 weeks ago and somebody is wanting to come in, but they haven't even begun to do any work with a trained clinician. That would be very difficult because we might be bringing them inadvertently into places, you know, asking somebody to notice your breath. Well, gosh, if that trauma involved holding your breath And we're now telling you, you know, relax. We don't really use the word relax, but, you know, come to rest or notice your breath. That can be very, very difficult. So we want people to be at a stage where they can begin to accept this. And so that's very important. As far as other physical contraindications, because this version of yoga, as many kinds, you can do yoga in a chair, you can do it on a floor. We do a form of yoga where we would offer it to people in any manner. So I can teach a mixed class. I can have people, some sitting in chairs, some sitting on the ground. I can do an entire class for everybody in chairs because there's an awful lot that you can get just out of that. So usually when people are screened, not only are they being screened for their appropriateness emotionally in the class, but I'll also try to find out if there are some body areas that are very difficult. They can't bend limbs, or you may notice that oftentimes when people have experienced trauma, there's almost a physical look of them, you know, kind of caving in almost in a self-protective way. So sometimes joints are very stiff and they have not an easy ability to, say, extend their spine. And so what would happen there is people are given enough cues to make adjustments. We don't overwhelm them, so there are usually two choices in an advanced class, maybe three choices given for options, but usually only two. And so I really feel that I work with classes that have a real mix, you know, people that have a difficult time walking with people that look like they're fitness instructors all in one class, and it's a matter of allowing them to choose the version of a form that we may do.
Okay, so it sounds like the contraindications would be less physically related because that would just move you toward adjustments physically, but the contraindications would be somebody who may not be ready emotionally for this, who may be too raw or without support, without any treatment so far.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes I'm apt to use the word it's a gentle form of yoga. However, there are some people who can do more of a flow, what we would call a vinyasa movement. But oftentimes in the classes that I teach, because we're trying to help people to feel sensations, if we go very fast, you might miss something along the way. So the invitation is usually, I mean, to take it at the pace that you wish, but our whole focus is to say, what muscles are you feeling that are tightening up and supporting you? What muscles are releasing right now? Where might the sensation be in your back or in your side or in your hips? And so, you know, people can move through this as slowly as need be if they have physical issues that might be going on.
Okay. Now we have some callers on the line, and I don't see anybody raising their hand asking a question. So I'll pause for a second in case anybody has a question. They're just feeling too shy, as people often are. Wait, there is a question here. Let me take a question. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, Susan. A wonderful show, and I'm really very inspired by Lisa. Thank you very much. I just had a quick question for Lisa. I'm wondering if someone who is suffering from clinical depression might benefit from your program, Lisa.
Actually, yes. The precepts of trauma-sensitive yoga, I'm actually going to be using it to teach young women with anxiety and stress disorders, that this ability or this type of teaching where we're helping people to come back to their body can also be very appropriate in these cases, because stress, in my way of thinking, is a very titrated down form of, it's sort of like a daily sort of trauma that we put ourselves through on a much lesser scale. I don't mean to minimize some of the things that people go through. Depression, and, you know, again, we would look to where is this depression emanating from, and it could be that there was some, you know, I don't want to oversimplify, but perhaps an issue with an early relationship, or perhaps there's something that was missed or something that was experienced in life. There could be some predisposition to it, but I'm also a believer that just because it runs in a family doesn't mean that this is something that you necessarily will have. So people who are experiencing mood disorders, having a way to find themselves to be safe space and to know that there are certain things that you have an agency over can be very, very helpful in cases of depression or anxiety as a whole.
great. Thank you very much. That's very helpful to know. Thank you.
Thank you very much, caller. Thanks, Lisa, for addressing that question. I think it's a really great question. Now, we're running out of time, and I'm wondering, is this form of yoga, is this covered by insurance, Lisa?
You know, it currently is not, not at least in our state, and I have yet to find in other states that it is. Sometimes it can be coupled under a therapist, and that's something to explore. So perhaps if this is something taught at a medical office that you are currently working with, that may be something to find out about. The other thing that I might offer is that certain health insurance plans have allow people to take yoga classes or other forms of wellness, what could be deemed wellness. And I would certainly say that this would fall into that, and so therefore they might be able to get some assistance with it. But unfortunately, complementary medicine, it's a little bit of an uphill battle, although I think that we're making great strides at this point.
Yeah, that'll be great when it's officially covered, and it doesn't have to. You don't have to go in through the back door. But I would imagine as it becomes more popular and more is known about it, and as insurance companies discover the effectiveness, because they like measurable results, they'll cover it. So,
Absolutely. Anyway,
Lisa,
we'll be working on that.
Yeah, I know, and we all work on that kind of thing. Lisa, I want to thank you. We are out of time. I want to thank you for all your wonderful information and for being such a terrific resource for people, not only through this program, but in the New Hampshire area. I'm sure a lot of people are going to tap into your knowledge and your expertise. I've really enjoyed doing this show with you, and I would like to also thank our listeners and our callers in for joining us on the show. Now, Lisa, if somebody wants to contact you to set up an appointment, I would imagine they would call your work phone, 603-860-1044, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes, and
or email you at lisa@samatalayurveda.com, samatalayurveda.com. Okay, well, Lisa, I'm going to say goodnight because we do have to go. I try to stick to the time. And I just would like to tell our listeners that my next episode will be Wednesday, February 25th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's a bit out of sequence because I'm going to be on vacation the following weeks. But I will be co-hosting with Meredith Richardson, and we are going to be addressing the issue of change. We're still in the process of fully formulating the subject and the conversation about that. Meredith is a conflict coach and a mediator, so change is at the heart of what she addresses. So we'll be doing that. In any event, thank you very much again, Lisa, and good night to you and good night to our listeners.
Thank you, Susan. Good night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.